All right, good morning, everyone. Sorry, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining me on this session. We're going to be talking about some of the storage management capabilities in System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, and how we manage SAN devices, NAS devices, and in addition to that, the Microsoft storage stack built on storage spaces and scale-up file server. So I want to start off with some of the feedback that we've gotten from customers when we ask them around, specifically around storage automation, and what are the pain points they're trying to address, if they can even start with that. And so a lot of them tell us basically no automation. They typically have to wait for storage to be provisioned. And the ones that actually have automation in their environment, it's usually a targeted set of investments to reduce human error. And so majority of customers are majority of customers are either looking at automation and saying, well, I just don't have the expertise. Typically, that's a different group that manages the storage, or I simply don't have the know-how to automate large-scale provisioning of LUNs and zones, et cetera. And pretty much the other 50% tells us that they have the scripting knowledge, they know how to build these programs, there's just simply too many APIs. There's just a lot of storage in the data center, especially if you look at like storage service providers that offer managed storage, large enterprises, or just organically enterprises that have grown over time to include a lot of different devices. And so these are the pain points that a lot of customers came to us with. And they were looking specifically in a Hyper-V space when we're looking, even three years ago, a lot of customers were looking for more of a converged environment to see, well, I want to deploy virtualization into my data center, whether it's a small test dev environment, or you're looking at VDI, or maybe going into production. There's a starting point of wanting to have virtualization. So that's where VMM comes into the picture. There's storage that you need in the back end, local storage, SAN storage, NAS storage, whatever kind of storage you need somewhere to put the VHDs. There's servers that you need for that capacity, and finally some sort of a network. So once you put those together, and primarily this is where the value of VMM lights up, you get virtual machines that you can start deploying, and definitely at scale. So you take this environment and you start looking at, well, what does System Center offer? Obviously, I'll be focusing here on Virtual Machine Manager, but it's for this environment, it's also good to know that from an infrastructure monitoring perspective, there's a lot of investments in Operations Manager to manage this end-to-end stack. There's automation that you've seen through Windows Azure Pack, SMA, Orchestrator, Service Manager, et cetera, on actually building some pretty intricate portals and experiences. There's application performance monitoring and app insights, and obviously Service Manager for the IT process management. For this session, I'll be talking about one specific case study with an MCS engagement that is actually using a lot of automation to build a PaaS solution on premises using the Microsoft System Center and Windows Server. And through that experience, they actually provide HA with no downtime to the application and to the customers, with a really resilient infrastructure. So if we look at just storage, if we're just focusing on storage, and we look at the investments in VMM to manage the storage, there's three areas that we looked at. Apologize, I see a lot of people coming in. I don't know if I started early or... okay. All right, so, sorry about that. So as far as storage management, we looked at three different areas, three areas of investment that from customer feedback, this is where they really needed help. So if you start with insight, really it's about going deep into the storage, understanding in context how storage is provisioned in your environment. And so obviously in VMM, we're focusing on Hyper-V. There's obviously other bare metal deployments out there, but VMM obviously focused on virtualization. Over time, we've enhanced our capabilities to support scale-out file server, but really the focus is Hyper-V. So from an insight perspective, we went to flexibility and having a large number of devices and also eventually leading up to automation. So where do we start with insight? So when we started this project 3 years ago, We looked at all the different capabilities and APIs and the different ways of managing storage, and we basically said standards-based management is the only way to go. And for us, we made a commitment to SMIS and SNIA, and we've been working on that with partners for the past few years. And so we've got a really healthy number of partners that have created SMIS providers, and a lot of the new companies coming up right now, a lot of the SDS and a lot of the All Flash, for example, et cetera, they're actually building their SMIS providers. So we knew we needed flexibility. It can't just be SAN. There's SAN, there's NAS, there's Fibre Channel Fabrics, there's all the investments that we've done in Windows, so we wanted to make sure we had the largest coverage. And so we started just with SAN, we eventually added NAS, scale-out file servers, and in R2 we added Fibre Channel Fabric. So you can manage an end-to-end environment using VMM, not only for Hyper-V, the physical part, but also the virtual part, so the virtual machines services, and I'll have an example of that. We targeted our focus on VMs, hosts, and clusters. That's where we do a lot of the automation. From a discovery perspective, we didn't just want to manage LUNs. We looked at, for example, VDS and some of the capabilities it had. It was very limited as far as what it could look at and what it could see and what it could manage. So we wanted to make sure that we had end-to-end discovery and mapping. So that means that once you get an array under management, it's not just here's an array with a bunch of LUNs, but here's an array in the context of your Hyper-V environment. We wanted to make sure that there was flexibility so that customers can take their pools and their shares, allocate them to maybe a host group for rapid provisioning, or maybe allocate LUNs for a cluster. There's maybe file shares as well into these environments. So there's a lot of flexibility here. Now, this isn't RBAC necessarily. We have had the feedback that customers want really granular capabilities and real granular permissions to maybe unmask LUNs but not create LUNs. We're not there with the RBAC model yet, but we do have the flexibility to at least choose which pools and LUNs you can allocate. And like I said, the storage automation is built in context of Hyper-V and virtualization services and VMs. We introduced storage classification, the ability to take a pool and label it gold, silver, or bronze, and then publish that up to the cloud. In this case, I mean VMM clouds. So virtual machine manager clouds live on premises, and you can allocate a particular storage classification to that cloud. Now, the way that lights up in, for example, Windows Azure Pack is you have a plan backed by a cloud, and that, so therefore you can have plans that have certain type of storage allocated to them. Our scope of management includes pools, LUNs, file shares, zones, zone sets, zone aliases. Those are, at a high level, the objects that really matter as far as automation. And from a self-service perspective, we wanted to make sure that customers could take advantage of all the storage without having to deal with having to know any intricate details about the actual fabric itself or infrastructure itself. And finally, we light up some scenarios around storage monitoring, capacity and trending. We make sure that everything we do is scalable, so we do a lot of testing at plugfests and internal and also with partners to ensure that the infrastructure itself is scalable. 60-node clusters, tens of thousands of zones, for example, thousands of LUNs getting created at scale. And finally, I won't cover this in this session, hybrid cloud services, so specifically Azure Recovery Services, sorry, Hyper-V Recovery Manager. So the new name for Hyper-V Recovery Manager is Azure Site Recovery. I apologize for that. And so that's a really good example of how VMM and Azure services integrate together for disaster recovery. There's a lot of great sessions. I've got a slide on that that are covering that with the actual team that's building that in IDC. All right. So I'll give you one example. I've pulled out names, and I really can't share customers in this case. But let me start with a real simple example of the most common use case when it starts to managing storage with VMM. A lot of customers don't get into the advanced cases until much later. But one of the typical cases is using classification and then exposing that up to a cloud. So let me switch to a demo. So I will switch over to the Fabric workspace. Under storage, you'll see classification and pools. So I've got several classifications of pools already created. I'm going to bring a pool under management. To bring a pool under management, I have to start with a storage provider. So a storage provider gives me access to the underlying arrays, to the underlying devices. So I'm going to go to the ribbon, click on Add Resources, click on Storage Devices. From there, I can click on, in this case, I'm going to bring in a SAN device. So I've got a SAN and NAS managed by SMIS. Click Next. I can type in the name of the actual provider, not the array itself. I need a set of credentials to access that provider. And then VMM will go off and discover and pull back some information about the device. In this particular case, this is a NetApp that's actually has SMB3 and iSCSI or block storage. So I'm going to bring Vault 2 under management, and I'm going to assign it to a particular classification. The intent of this classification is that it's going to go up to a business unit. Business unit, in this case, I will present it to a cloud. Okay, so I'll tag with BU Tier 1, and I'll hit Next. So I'll take a few seconds. So this brings in all of the storage pool information, the array information, all the LUNs, all the initiators, and all the masking sets. Key piece here is that VMM is starting to know half of the picture. It knows everything about the array. Now what it needs to do is marry that with what's on the Hyper-V side. So while we let that finish, scroll up here. So I'm going to go up to the servers area. I will click on the cluster that I need to refresh. Let me wait for this job to finish. Okay, so the array has been successfully discovered. So now I'm going to right-click on the cluster and hit refresh. So I need to do both sides of the equation so that VMM can map all of the initiators on the host side to all of the initiators that are in record on the array. And through that, we know, once we have those two linked up, we know all the LUNs that are exposed, and then we start putting together the information for disks and VPD pages to the LUNs and the unique identifiers that we find on both sides. Again, we're not interrogating the array directly. We're using the provider for that. So this is almost done. Okay. So let me go into one of the hosts, click on Properties. So on the left-hand side, you'll see the Storage tab. And so I already got a LUN that I've exposed to the host. And so this is coming off of my Vol 1 on the NetApp array, and it's already classified with BU2 Tier 1. So all the classifications get inherited if you set them on the pool. You don't have to micromanage the LUNs. So this one already has it. So what that means is that I can create, for example, on my self-service side, or if I was deploying through a Windows Azure pack, I'm going to switch over to a cloud user. So as you can see, the environment is very limited. I don't see all the fabric information. I can create a virtual machine. I'll pick one that already has the BU2 Tier 1 classification allocated to it. So in this case, I'm not going to change anything. I will just show that it's got the BU2 Tier 1 allocated to it, and then I can deploy to the cloud. So from this perspective, once I've allocated that storage in my environment and the cloud already has that storage, then I can start deploying VMs into that classification. So from here, I can start creating other types of clouds that have different classifications if I want to differentiate my clouds by storage. So let's switch back and talk about classifications. So the classifications in this release are simply metadata that we tag onto a cloud. We have the ability to tag them on other objects, which I'll cover. But once you tag classification to a pool, for example, now that environment is tagged as gold, silver, or bronze. Now I can streamline my VM deployment that way by expressing intent on the templates themselves. So if I need fast storage, or if I need a particular storage with replication on it, or if I need storage with high IOPS because of my application requirements demand something that gives me the best performance, I can start either as an Fabful administrator, I can target my templates or services to that storage, or as a cloud user, I can start consuming that storage and also be constrained by quotas. Placement is classification aware. That's how we actually are able to link all this up. So with a few clicks of adding the provider, bringing it under management, and then having a LUN that's exposed to my host, I can start deploying in a multi-tenant environment. And we see a lot of the customers, internal and external to Microsoft, starting to use classification in this way, particularly for self-service environments. So if I start with a gold classification, gets assigned to the pool, and then if I can create a classification, it's basically just gold or just a name and a description. I see that in my UI when I bring the provider under management, I select the pools, select the classification that I need, and now it's assigned. There's no changes to the array itself. We don't modify any settings, purely a database setting. And then all the LUNs inherit that classification. So we also introduced storage disk classification for two reasons. Some customers have additional create LUNs with additional capabilities, and so they want to be able to differentiate from the gold storage. They want to call it something else. And also customers that are not using SAN storage, for example, or their storage device isn't manageable by VMM. And so now they have now you have the ability to classify a particular disk without having to manage storage. So if you have a Fusion IO card, for example, that looks like a local disk, or if you just have a local storage you're using for VDI boxes, you can start differentiating maybe some SSDs from some SAS drives. So a few key pieces to note about classification. If I have a cloud with no classification, basically it's a free-for-all. So if I have a host group with 14 classifications and a bunch of storage, and I create a cloud with no classification, VMs can land anywhere. Now, if I set classification gold on my cloud, then that cloud is limited to gold. That means any template can only go on gold. If I have two classifications, then it's essentially whatever's picked in the template, but you're scoped to what the template you're scoped to what the cloud offers. So you can only pick gold or silver. You cannot pick both. There's an important update in UR2 to fix a classification issue that we found. Highly recommend that you install UR2. How many of you are updated to UR2 for those deploying VMM? Okay. So let's start talking about now some of the architecture and how VMM actually does this. The core component that allows us to do all the storage management and what I'll show in the later slides is the storage management API. This API ships in Windows Server 2012. Obviously, it's been revved in R2 and will continue to get improvements over time. It's a WMI V2 provider, and it gives us WMI interfaces and also PowerShell. VMM uses the WMI path. Obviously, PowerShell is exposed for anyone to use it and consume as well for any kind of value-add services. So Inbox, Windows Server Manager, actually uses SMAPI for pool management, disk management, volume creation, et cetera. We have partners that are building value-add tools on top of SMAPI, and also VMM that uses SMAPI. Now, there's a particular way that we use SMAPI in that we centralize everything, use of SMAPI onto the VMM servers, and I'll show that in the next slide. We don't go to every box and manage the storage locally. We actually manage everything through VMM servers. That means we register all providers to VMM. That means we connect to the Spaces subsystems, clustered subsystems, through the VMM servers. So for partners to plug in underneath, there's several types of providers. There's a SMP path, native SMP path. Storage Spaces is actually managed as an SMP as well. It's a provider built by Microsoft, and also any partner building an SMIS compliant provider. VMM also uses what's called pass-through. This is how we manage NAS devices today and also fiber channel fabrics. It's still part of SMAPI, but it allows us to talk SIM down to the underlying providers. So the cases for SIM are much more advanced, and so I'm not going to cover them here, but just so you know how this is designed, SIM pass-through allows us to extend the capabilities of the underlying device. What that also means for any partner that's building value-add solutions or any of your customers that are building automation, if there's something in the array that, let's say, isn't exposed by SMAPI, but it's provided on the underlying by the provider, you can always get access to it via the same API. So you can build UI plugins or you can build runbooks that access everything in SMAPI, but now using SIM pass-through. So we start with VMM server. This could be in a single node or in an HA configuration. The VMM service talks WMI down to SMAPI that's local on those boxes. From there, in the SMIS case, we use the storage management service that actually allows us to transcode WMI calls down into SIM XML. So this is where the discovery process starts with arrays and pools and LUNs. So that's when we reach out to the provider, and then obviously there's a set of arrays managed. Some providers are proxy providers, so they can have multiple arrays. Others are embedded providers, so there's one provider to one device. Now, we don't replace the storage management tools, so if there's a SAN admin tool out there, those tools do not get replaced. We actually try to keep a consistent information in our database compared to what's available through the SAN admin tool. And finally, on the host side, we use the iSCSI initiator APIs, HBA providers, and MPIV to discover everything of what we know about the storage itself. And we, in this case, we do use SMAPI local in the box, only for volumes and disks, partitions, et cetera, just for the local discovery of those disks, not for the external storage. So if you blow out the picture and look at everything that VMM is managing today, again, starting from the center box, VMM, talking to SMAPI, on the local box, there's either a storage management service, an SMP provider for spaces, or a partner provider that is installed there. In any other case, we actually do not recommend to install those providers on the VMM server, especially if you're running at scale. These consume memory, they consume CPU. So the primary goal of installing VMM is so that you can consume all the resources on those boxes without much contention. So you offload the database, you offload the file server, the library server. You offload as many providers as possible. In some cases, this is the deployment model for SMP, but for SMIS, they're all off box. In R2, we also added all of the file share management. So file share management today does not go through SMAPI. We just use the SMB3 APIs for that. But for spaces, the JBOD creation, everything else, we use the SMAPI. So let me bring another case up. So this is actually an internal group that is using the full Microsoft stack. And so as part of that stack, they're using scale-out file server. Typical four-node configuration with about 240 disks, SSD, and SAS behind them. And so some of the key pieces that they are able to accomplish with this new architecture, essentially using a full Microsoft stack, number one, they get all the tenant isolation necessary. There was a lot of challenges that customers were not able to deploy at scale and get the necessary isolation with all of the HNV work we've done. That's actually solved in R2. There's a lot of work going on around APIs and different customers having different requirements, and the portals that were built internal for lab environments growing organically over time. So we wanted to make sure that there was a standard API for management and automation. And finally, with APIs come portal, and then there's many portals for this environment, so there's a need to standardize on a single experience. So with the switch over to a Microsoft stack, that means a full storage managed by Microsoft, and you get the Spaces technology there, Hyper-V, System Center. You get a lot of the capabilities around live migration. They've done something really innovative around reducing the number of copies. I'll show a demo of that, how they use symlinks for ingestion of VHDs without actually having to copy the VHD into the library. So what did we get? So this is an internal project. What do we get out of this? Essentially, this environment scales up to about 75,000 VMs. That's how much capacity they have, 4,000 hosts, 8 petabytes of storage. Now, we were able to close down about 41 test labs by deploying this infrastructure. So that's about 3,800 machines, desktop machines, server machines, you name it. It was anything that anybody can get their hands on were in these labs. And so that's all gone. And we instituted this policy where if you have a clunker, if you have these old machines, 4, 5, 6 years old, trade it in for a VM. And that's how we actually were able to get a lot of people to convert. This environment running today, it's about 30,000 VMs per day. This is test dev. But test dev at this scale, call it production. So 30,000 VMs per day So far, they've served about 12 million VMs. So in this environment, that's how much churn we have to meet all the test dev requirements. So one of the key pieces that they use as part of this deployment is the ability to roll out a scale-out file server. So before, when we just managed SAN and NAS, we don't have control over the boxes. We don't know about the operating system. We're not going to get into the firmware. That's too deep. When it's a Windows-only stack, we own the stack. So that means we start with bare metal. So if we start with bare metal, obviously you're going to... how many of you have used bare metal deployments, OS deployment in VMM? Okay, so just a quick overview on this slide. It's just basically going to show you how VMM deploys servers, whether they're Hyper-V or scale-out file server, from bare metal. This is the scale-out file server case. So we use BMC cards, DRAX, ILOs, et cetera, to remote boot the machine once we've discovered it. Sorry, to remote boot the machine using an IP address and a credential. Once it's booted, it's going to pixie boot into WDS. It's already been authorized by VMM to serve it. WDS has been authorized to serve out a WinP image. So once once it's authorized, WinP image gets pulled down. There's some scripts that we run internally to start prepping the box, and then we start downloading a VHD. In this case, this could be any generic Windows Server 2012 R2 VHD in the library. There's nothing special we need. Obviously, you can inject whatever additional software packages you require, but in this case, it could be even something used for VMs. Once that VHD gets downloaded, we inject any drivers that you specify. We boot from VHD, so we don't just use VHD as a transfer mechanism. We actually use it as a boot, as part of boot. Once the OS is up, join the domain, install our agent, and now we've got a scale-out file server. So we start building up these scale-out file servers, and then once we're ready, we bring them in, clustered, and so we create a scale-out failover cluster out of them, and then we layer on top the scale-out file server role. One thing is to install file server role in the as part of DISM. Another part is to actually create the clustered role. So we do this using physical computer profiles. These were called host profiles in the past. And so we've changed this around, so now you use one profile to deploy either type of server. Key pieces to highlight for those that have used bare metal deployment, we continue to support, we support NIC configuration, but we don't have teaming. Teaming in R2 is tightly coupled to logical switches. And so in this release, we couldn't decouple the two. So we support the generic NICs. And how many of you deployed scale-out file servers? How many with spaces? Okay, so let me ask you a question. NIC teaming, is that something that you typically do with the scale-out file server? Is that just standard deployment? Okay, no need for that. Anyone using teaming on the scale-out file server? Okay, so on the management side, yes, not on the data path. So I'm assuming you're using RDMA? Okay. And so we're looking into, for a future release, if we support this. Overwhelming feedback we're getting right now is that it's not necessary. But in the management path, it is. But for the storage side, it's not really that, it's not needed. Okay. So there's a new wizard in VMM that allows you to create a scale-out file server from bare metal. You can pick the role that you need. End result is a scale-out file server fully managed by VMM along with clustered spaces. And so at this point, you can start creating some shares. So let's quickly walk through an example of that. So I'm going to switch. I'm going to stay in the fabric space. I'm going to scroll down and click on my... Actually, let me switch to library. So in library, I've got under physical computer profiles, I have two profiles that I've created. The key piece to highlight about a profile is the NIC configuration can be done through what's called common device naming. So instead of you having to know the MAC address up front, if you work with your OEMs and predefine the CDN that gets burned into the NIC, you can actually define this upfront. So if you have a data path or anything else that you use, production, backup, whatever the terms are that you use for the physical uplink or the physical connection, you can model that inside of a profile. When VMM deploys, it'll find the CDN and then attach the IP address to that CDN. Otherwise, you're stuck with MAC addresses. You can specify a DHCP. Most common is static IP. And then the last one is how we will create the partitions and the volumes on the local disk. We always assume that there's going to be local disks. We do know that there's some customers that have deployed Boot from SAN. How many of you have used Boot from SAN or are using Boot from SAN in your environment? Okay. So I don't think it's the same hands that have been using bare metal deployment. Is there an overlap there that you are not using bare metal deployment because Boot from SAN isn't natively supported? One? Okay. So there's some internal questions on how we would support Boot from SAN, primarily in the Fibre Channel case. But today it would be a local disk. Okay. So switch back to Fabric. I'm going to create my cluster. So I'm going to name it test. Sorry, this is, yeah. So there's two pieces I've got to provide here. Is the cluster name and the scale-out file server. They can't obviously be the same. They're two different endpoints on the network. If I have existing servers, let's say I've got my own, you know, WDS environment or however I install the server using a CD and I go to the data center and that's how you want to do it. If you already have those servers built, you can use the same UI to select those existing servers on the network and then provision those. Otherwise, it's the second option, which is Windows NAS, and you have the option of skipping validation or not, similar to the Clue admin experience for creating a cluster. Now, I've got to specify a run as account. These are the credentials used to access the BMC. Now, the first two examples are what we ship in box, IPMI Smash. So these are standards-based protocols that are used to communicate to these remote boxes, power on, power off, logs, and you can get some other information about the box itself. I'm going to use something I whipped up here to do a same deployment from a VM just for demo purposes. And now I'm going to provide the range of IPs, not for the servers, but for the BMCs. So VMM will go off and discover all the BMCs on a network. Either if you give it a subnet, it'll just crawl through the whole subnet. If you give it one IP or a range, it'll go talk directly to those IPs. Now I can select all of these servers. I know them. I know that this is what I want to deploy. And then I can start providing the name information. I can start customizing some of the network, whether it's DHCP or static IP, what IP I should use if you want to specify that. And then I just continue down this path. And finally, you would get to the summary page that will tell you exactly what you're deploying. First, four-node scale-out file server, this is you know, manageable. If you're deploying a 16 or 32 or 64-node Hyper-V cluster, most likely you're going to script this. And so I do have some examples in the deck. In some other talks as well that I've given, you can walk through how to do this in an using automation. Okay, so once I've deployed my scale-out file server, if I switch over to file servers, I will see my scale-out file server under management. So the act of deploying, automatically we know the provider that we need to talk to, the clustered spaces provider, and then we just start communicating with that endpoint. And so that gives us the scale file server role, if there's any file shares. More importantly, it gives us the ability to manage the storage spaces. So if I right-click on my scale-out file server, I go to Manage Pools. I've already got a pool created, but I can go New. And let's say I pick 5 disks. Provide a name. And so now, again, I get the classification selection. I can start with just simply classifying the underlying pool. Let's call this SDS, create. And so I can create more pools in here, and for now I'm just going to create one. So now VMM is going off and talking to the scale-out file server, and it'll go and create the pool. Now, the typical steps that happen after this, I've got to go provision the space, make sure it's attached to the cluster, initialize, partition, format, bring it in as a CSV, create the file share and ACLs and all that work. That's just time consuming. So easier path is once the SCAD file server and the pool has been provisioned, I can go to the ribbon, say create file share, pick my the SCAD file server. I will pick the storage type. In this case, I want to create from pool. I can pick TechEd test. I don't need to provide a classification. That's inherited. Give it a size. I can specify NTFS if I want two-way or three-way mirror, or I can also select parity. So I'll give it a name. Very important. Okay. So this will actually go off and work with the cluster. So I'm going to switch over to the cluster view, and I'm going to go to disks. I might have already caught it after it created the disk, so, or not. So this is going to go off and, like I said, create the space. Make sure it's attached to the cluster. Once attached to the cluster, it'll do all of the provisioning and then add it to the cluster itself. To the failover cluster role, and then express it as a share or not. I guess I missed it. Let's go over to the role. Scale file server. Yep, and I've got the share there. Already created. So all I'm left with now is once I've got the share ready to go, I go to Fabric, and then I scroll up in Fabric to my cluster, right-click, properties, and then file share storage. It's got a problem there. And then pick the new one I just provisioned. It's under management, and hit OK. So at this point, similar to what I did with the SAN case, once it's exposed to Hyper-V, that classification is available on the cloud, and then your self-service users can start deploying from the cloud as well. All right. So the key investments here in VMM with R2 is around the storage pool provisioning. We actually didn't have that in SP1, so that's brand new. The intent-based file share provisioning is also new as well. We bring in all the physical disks. You can do all the pool management. But basically, once it gets up to a file share, once you've done all the work to provision your Hyper-V environment from bare metal, your scaled file servers from bare metal, it's like consuming any other storage, whether you're a Fabric admin or a tenant using a cloud. Once you have classifications and shares, you can start targeting your VMs either directly to a share or to a classification. So this gives you the flexibility to have environments grow over time and actually have SAN storage today and maybe SMB3-based storage tomorrow. And also, another key piece is here, the ACLing. So VMM will ACL the file share and the underlying file system so that the Hyper-V nodes and VMM can access that. We don't offer just generic ACL management, but we do it in the context of Hyper-V. So I talked about bringing in a scaled file server under management. And so I essentially have, again, the example of a pool with an SDS classification. And then instead of LUNs getting them, we jump all the way to file shares. So we essentially manage two key objects here, file shares and pools, and then the file server that offers that capacity. So a few things to note, since we are managing the Hyper-V, the scaled file server cluster itself, we don't have every part of Clue Admin in VMM. We've selected the key pieces that are typically managed by a user, by an administrator, and so the first one is Disk Witness. This is the one that we support natively, and so you basically pick a pool, hit OK, Disk Witness is created. There's really nothing much to it. Obviously, it would be great to get your feedback if there's other types of other ways that you manage quorum. This is really necessary in a scaled file server with less than 5 nodes. Basically, if you want to sustain a two-node outage, you want to have a third witness. This is where Disk Witness comes in. If you have more, 5 or more, chances of a two-node failure is already pretty high. Chances of more than that unlikely. So you can use the dynamic quorum capabilities in a failover cluster, so you can avoid the whole need for a witness. So VMM does require an agent to be deployed out to the scaled file server. And so we do that as part of bare metal deployment. But if you have an existing scaled file server, bring that under management, and then we can deploy the agent on demand. Now, a key piece here is that if you want to update the agent, right now we don't manage the agent the same way we do Hyper-V hosts. So you would go to the infrastructure tab. How many of you are familiar with the infrastructure tab in VMM? Okay, so in infrastructure tab, you've got a list of all the infrastructure servers. So by default, VMM server and all the Hyper-V nodes are there. You can bring the scaled file server into the infrastructure as well once the agent is deployed. And from there, so you just provide the computer name. From there, you can start managing the agents themselves. So once you go from R2 to R3, UR2 to UR3, once that's deployed, once that's available, you will get a message in here that says the agent is responding, but it's out of date. So you can just right-click on the server and then update agent. This is also how we do compliance checks if you're using WSUS integration. How many of you are using WSUS with VMM? Okay, for those that are using it, you can patch your infrastructure that does include the scaled file servers. In a future release, we will look at integrating with CAU, cluster aware updating, but right now we just update using WSUS. So I started this talking about an internal team that is building our private cloud infrastructure for test dev. So one of the requirements they had is that, well, VMM, the way it deploys VHDs or VMs, it has to have a VHD in the library, and then it has to be discovered, and then you can attach a VHD to a template. Now, their churn at 30,000 VMs a day, they were getting hundreds, even thousands of VHDs changing every day. So they didn't want to be in the business of an upload of 1,000 VHDs per day. I mean, it sounds simple. You just delegate it to the customer, but it really wasn't efficient from a storage perspective. So what they did is they actually used Symlinks, something that's VMM is capable of supporting. And the way that they use Symlinks, basically, the customer uploads the image to the portal. The portal, all it really cares about is a path. So obviously, this is an internal environment, so it's a trusted set of hosts. So all we care about is a path. The portal submits the new request for a link into their workflow engine. Now, the workflow engine creates a symlink on the VMM library share. Now, simply it's a directory symlink, so this will symlink back to the file share with the customer's VHDs. The workflow calls the library refresher. We look at that as just a normal library share, and then we enumerate all the disks underneath it. Now, the customer, when they want to deploy a VM, they call back to their portal. A temporary template, at least in their particular case, a temporary template gets created using that VHD in VMM. Now, the actual data that's flowing, since we're not copying anything to the library first, the data does flow from the tenant's file server through the library server onto the Hyper-V host. So this is not necessarily rapid provisioning. This is rapid ingestion. But if you have a really flat network, if you have 10 gig in your data center, actually copy time with fast file copy is actually pretty good. Okay, so there's definitely trade-offs whether you're doing fast file ingestion or rapid provisioning with VHDs already in the library. Basically, once the VHD lands on the Hyper-V host, they go off and create the VM. They can also integrate this with DiffDisk. Any of you deploying VMs using differencing disks? Maybe for VDI or test dev, one or two. So it works with both. So great way to save on space from if you're ingesting a lot of files from end users, maybe from a lab environment, et cetera. VMM does rely on CopyFile2 APIs to make these file copies from the library share all the way up to the Hyper-V host. In the event that, for whatever reason, there's a hiccup, the network is, just something happens, VMM will always fall back to Bits. Bits does work as well in this case. So Bits will follow back the symlink and pull the file from the library share all the way up to the Hyper-V host. So you get a guaranteed copy. You get space efficiencies on a library server. You avoid the constant churn of VHDs landing on the file server or customers having to upload them and have to manage them. And finally, you get an efficient copy where it's possible. So let me switch gears to Fibre Channel Fabrics. So there's another example for, this is an MCS engagement that's going on right now. It's out in the Netherlands. It's actually a pretty large project. And the key components that customers are looking for in this case is around the ability to create a PaaS environment. Their main requirement is that they're getting a lot of applications with very little consistency across the environment. And so they were looking for something like PaaS, but they're not ready for the public cloud. So this team actually engaged with the customer and has built a on-premises PaaS solution. Now, some of the unique pieces about this environment is that, number one, full automation. So from top down, you're going to get fully automated provisioning. From a tenant perspective, all they worry about is getting an environment. They get dev, test, acceptance, prod. Maybe multiple of those environments, but let's start with four. The customer only manages the application and the workflow to go from dev, test, acceptance, production. And that's all they really provision from a portal perspective. Fully isolated, and underneath that environment from a delivery perspective, all of the Microsoft components are delivered are actually delivered for that tenant in order to create the PaaS-like experience. Now, the customer AD, in other words, the tenant AD, is separate from the underlying Fabric AD, and that's a good separation. As far as what VMM is managing, it can manage the full infrastructure without having to worry about the Active Directory in the tenant environment. So full segregation. And as far as the tenants themselves, they get monitoring as a service. So this is a solution that's built. Now the key piece that I want to highlight here is how they've actually been able to achieve HA. So since they're running, they're delivering PaaS to the customer, and they need the ability to continue working in the event of a disaster. So what they've done is actually enabled with VMM and HP. The Hyper-V nodes in each site are clustered intra-site. Okay, there's no applications there except for Hyper-V. There's no replication either from Hyper-V's perspective. The actual applications, the virtual nodes, the VMs, are clustered in a multi-site guest cluster. And then the LUNs are exposed, and then they use replication, sync replication, from site to site. So the different environments, dev, test, acceptance, production, are all in an HA configuration across sites. Lose site one, the application continues to run in site two. So the automation not only includes the application deployments, but also all of the underlying Fibre Channel Fabric provisioning. So let's switch over to that. All right, so I'm going to stay in the storage, in the fabric workspace. I'm going to jump down to storage. And then I've got Fibre Channel Fabrics, which is new in R2. So similar to how I brought a SAN under management, I will bring a Fibre Channel Fabric under management. So I've got storage devices. I will have a Fibre Channel Fabric as a fourth option. Now here I can pick, or I can type in the provider name, give it a credential. So similar experience, we go off and do discovery. In this case, we're doing fabric discovery. That's the first thing that we bring in under management. So once you have a fabric, you specify a fabric classification. This is slightly different from a storage classification. Storage classification is meant for the consumption of the pools and LUNs and shares. In this case, we're talking about a fabric classification. So the way we intend to use this in the future, once we integrate with services, is that you can deploy a service template into an environment and have, let's say, Fab A and Fab B classified as production. VMM will recognize that these are two different fabrics. So essentially, what typical configuration is two fabrics with an air gap in between. And then once those are deployed, VMM will do all the work around zoning and everything else that has to be done so it can be done. So this is end-to-end from the customer's perspective. They just have a guest cluster, right, from VMM side. Zones are created on each fabric. Zone sets are activated. And then all the LUNs are exposed to the initiators and the targets. All that work happens as part of provisioning. We're not there yet. Right now it's built in layers. All right. So I've got my fabric under management. So there's two zones. How many of you are familiar with fiber channel fabrics, zone sets, zone aliases? Okay. So a zone set is essentially a collection of zones. Zones is a collection of initiators and targets, so let's say worldwide port names. This essentially tells, from a fabric perspective, what two endpoints can talk to each other. So I've got two zone sets typically in a fabric, and I'm overloading the term fabric. There's fabric, VMM fabric, the infrastructure, and then the term fabric that comes from SMIS, or what's called an admin domain. Okay, I got a fabric, I got two zone sets, inactive and active. So all of my new zones get put into the inactive zone set. That's a database with all the zone information. So any new zones go in an inactive zone set, and then they have to be activated as part of, in order to light up the path. So far this is just, you know, this is just infrastructure. It has to be done. Where this starts to light up is if I move over to the cluster, let's say my Hyper-V cluster, go to the properties, click on storage. So here I can click add. So as you can, in this case, I've got iSCSI array that I can add to this host, but I can't add a fiber channel fabric. So what VMM has done in this case is, number one, interrogate it if it has HPAs. If it has HPAs, it goes in and asks, what are all the discovered endpoints and what fabric are you connected to? So in this particular case, this host actually is not connected to any fabric. So there's no reason to enable the iSCSI, the fiber channel onboarding. So if I switch over to a different host that I know has HPAs, same experience. I go to hardware, scroll down to FC adapters. I've got four adapters, two on each on different fabrics. So in this case, we already know this HPA is connected to Brocade Prod. This is the one I just imported. And just shows me classification and the fabric ID. So once I have that, I can, should have stayed there. Sorry. I can go to storage. And so I can go and add now a fiber channel array. So we've taken the guesswork out of having to understand how to lay out the zones by essentially connecting the dots. So at the physical layer, VMM has connected all the endpoints and said, these two can talk to each other. These are guaranteed to talk to each other. So you can do, for example, create a test zone. In this case, I've got two different arrays. I already have the HP 3-part. I can do a V7000, for example, connected to that. I can pick the target ports. I can pick the initiator ports. And it essentially boils down to two commandlets. Get the zone set, and then pass all the initiators into that new zone. So once I hit create and OK, so in this case, VMM will go off and create the zone. At this point, I don't have connectivity, so I got to jump back to the fabric once this is done. Okay, I'll jump back to Fiber Channel Fabrics, and I've got 38 zones now in this inactive zone set, and this is the one I'm going to activate. So we'll wait for this to complete, and then we'll jump back to the host, and then start provisioning some LUNs. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the cluster. So in this case, I can go to properties and look at the storage. Keep going to the wrong host. Okay, I click on the standalone host, go to properties, click on storage, and I should see two arrays now. So I had the 3-part already zoned, that was already part of it, and now I've got the IBM as part of this. So that's great. They're connected. So what? Now I can do something interesting, which is start provisioning storage from that array. So if I click on the host, properties, and storage now, I can go add a disk. Should have stayed there. Add a disk. And I can create a LUN. And in this case, I didn't show the pool name, but this is the pool name for the IBM V7000. Create the name, give it a certain size. And so now I am creating a LUN. This is actually a synchronous call, so the LUN's created. And now I can go and start giving it some disk information. It's standalone host, so I can't make it a CSV. But in this case, once I hit OK, now this host, let's see if I have it here. See how it comes up. So in this case, I've created the LUN. I am now unmasking it to all the initiators that are part of this host. From there, I'm going to do all the provisioning for the disks itself. And then at the end of this, it'll be a drive letter, or if it was a cluster, it'll be a CSV that I can start deploying VMs to. This might be taking a little longer than expected, so I'm going to... Yes. I'm going to ask you if you can use the mic for the question just so that everything can get recorded.
The first part is the SMIS provider of the switch coming into play, and the second part is the SMIS provider from a storage perspective coming into play, right?
Correct.
For the entire workflow that you just described.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, two different providers, yes.
Typically, what percentage of a LUN's property are you able to set when you're creating LUNs on a storage array? Because SMIS tends to be pretty generic. So is it thin provision, fat provision? I mean, zero detect from a three-part perspective. So there's a lot of different additional properties you can set. Are you setting all those, or is it just a basic LUN that you're creating?
We have specifically targeted the basic one, so thin and thick. As an example, and so that's a starting point in size as well, and what pool they're coming from. We don't go and configure all the different settings. You're right, SMIS does have a lot of power, but there's also a lot of different properties, and so these are the ones that we've settled on for now, and some of the asks that we've had from both partners and customers are on QoS, enabling some features like deduplication, compression, things like that. So probably the next one that we're gonna go after is QoS, and
Thanks.
Setting up QoS. All right, this one's, I don't know why it's hanging on me, but trust me, a disk would have appeared. All right, so switch back to this and then start talking about applications, virtual machines and services. So VMM supports three different topologies when you're creating guest clusters. I just showed all of the zoning work that can be done along with masking and unmasking for fiber channel LUNs. We also support this for iSCSI. Obviously, in this case, we don't manage VLANs. We don't do anything special on a network. We just assume the two endpoints can talk to each other, and we can do all the LUN masking. And then I'm not showing this here, but shared VHDX is a feature that we've introduced in R2 along with Windows Server 2012 R2 Hyper-V that supports shared VHDX. So pretty much from a coverage perspective, you can start with the large scale environments using fiber channel storage, all the way up to an SMB environment or full Microsoft stack using SMB3 in spaces. The idea here is that you've got guest clusters that you can create in any type of storage. So let me flip back to how we enable this. I should have built this up. Yeah, all right. So the idea here is that now we're using pass-through. Pass-through allows us to do all of the fabric discovery, all of the zone creation, zone set, et cetera, but we're using straight SIM calls. So if this is something that's interesting to you and you want to start automating, in SMA API, if you just open up Windows Server and type in the storage module, you will not see new zone or new zone alias. That's not native in SMA API. You would have to go to VMM for that. If it's of interest, definitely feel free to reach out to me. I can send you some pass-through examples if there's some automation that you want to build using pass-through. There's a lot of information that now is in VMM. So feedback that we've seen is that this is a great place now to understand more than just what's managed with Hyper-V. In this case, we look at the entire fabric. So you can see other devices and other zones and how other devices are connected. You can also marry that with the storage array information. You could see LUNs and what they're exposed to in case of, for example, ESX. We don't do any of the storage management for VMware, but you could start bridging that information together. And classification we covered. So I show this because I want to differentiate this one from the VM experience. This is what I went through before for zoning of the Hyper-V host to the storage and the zone activation. So let's switch over to the services view. And if you were, for example, to build a guest cluster using VMM, That's unfortunate. Okay, so let's switch here. So I'm going to switch over to VMs and services. So I've already got two services created. This is a single tier, two node, or two instance services. How many of you have actually deployed services using service templates in VMM? Okay. So the starting point of a VM and a service instance is a template. So I would go to the library and I don't know what that was. I don't think so. Continue. All right. If you weren't awake, you're awake now. Okay, so service templates. I'm going to start with the demo template here. Very simple template. Sorry, nothing special here. I'm going to open up the designer. So service templates are not just VM with OSs and some hardware config. This is essentially a full, you can deploy a full application using a service template. So the key piece here is that I've got a VM template that I've imported into my service template. And this is the machine tier one that you see here. I've got some hardware configuration that I have. And then I've got one virtual HBA that I'm either going to say I need dynamic worldwide port names or I need static. Static is really interesting if you want to start doing some automation, exposing LUNs and everything else before the VMs get created. Otherwise, you can just wait for the worldwide port names to appear on the Hyper-V host and then start provisioning your storage. Really depends up to you. We don't manage worldwide port names, so we don't have a centralized repository for worldwide port names the same way we do for Macs, something that we're looking into. But for now, we just depend on Hyper-V to do that. Okay? So this is a simple example. And so once I deploy my service template, I would go and configure deployment, test. And then I'm going to pick the host group with standalone because I know that that has the host in it. So the service now goes through the deployment phase. In this case, it's got to go find a host. So I'm okay with all the settings so far. I'm going to refresh my preview. So right now, there's no suitable hosts. VMM will then go and find the host. I've got a really simple example. Obviously, I could have targeted this at the host group level, and VMM would still found all the hosts, connected to the right fabrics, and then now you can go off and deploy. So this is a simple example. I'm going to delete the service instance. More interesting one is, let's say I want to deploy a SQL guest cluster. So in this case, I'm going to open up the designer. Similar experience, it's a one-tier service instance or template that I'm going to deploy two VM instances. Now I'm going to look at the template itself. So similar configuration I have, in this case it's just one HBA. OS configuration, name, et cetera, all that. Now, here's where we start to add all of or model all of the scripts. So I want to provision all of the storage beforehand. So this is where I would use a static worldwide port name for all the HBAs. Since I'm deploying two VMs, I need four worldwide port names. Each VM takes a primary and a secondary worldwide port name. They all have to be zoned beforehand in this particular example. So deploying the VM, that's the simple part, right? Install the OS, configure it, no issues. Then I need to start going and configuring the internal software. So for example, I would give myself rights. After that, I would, and now I'm assuming in here that MPIO, I can select which features get installed. MPIO is installed, so I'm going to go configure MPIO. In this case, if you look at this script, we actually claim a bunch of devices already, typical ones that we see. So we're just going to claim that automatically. You can always add more. And then I'm going to start creating my cluster, my SQL environment. So I've staged my deployment with a secondary VHD. It's got some .NET stuff, some SQL stuff. And so I can now run a script to start deploying SQL itself. Now I need storage. So I've already provisioned my storage. In other words, I've already created the zones and unmasked the LUNs even before the VMs are available. All that can be done, you can pre-stage that. In this example, now I'm going to go and look at the disks. I'm going to pull the disks, let's say by name, initialize partition format. Now I'm in the guest. Okay, so if I'm in the guest, I don't have all of the automation in VMM. quickly show. So in these scripts, I'm going to look at the SQL form resource, and I'm looking at first. So I'm staging the nodes. So I'm going to bring up one node first. This will be where I create the cluster, and then I just add the rest of the nodes. So I basically go through, and once I have got my cluster, I start and, that was SQL form, but first node here, and there we go. Open with. Okay. So I'm going to essentially go off and enumerate all of my disks. In this case, I've exposed, let's say, a three-par set of disks. And then for each one, I'm going to go enumerate and create a volume. Then I'm going to, at this case, I've already created the cluster. From the cluster, I can start enumerating disks and adding them into the cluster itself. And so the end of this is all the cluster has been validated and everything's ready to go. I can now continue to the next one. So VMM will essentially just work through each one of these scripts, deploying the cluster, deploying SQL in the first node. And then once the first node is ready, and then it'll switch over to the second node. So I've separated my first VM from other VMs. So all of this process goes through. Let me close this. So I'm going to switch back to VMs and services. So this is the SQL example that I was talking about. In this case, I will... So I provisioned three LUNs, and so the end result of this is a fully functioning cluster that's part that now has SQL and everything ready to go, so I can start using it for my application. But let's say I wanted to add a new LUN. So the way we already talked about onboarding, right? So similar to the hosts, you would go to properties, and then click on hardware configuration, and then here I've got my HBA. Okay. So I can also go down to storage. I can hit add. So I have the options of adding, let's say, the IBM array. So that's another one I can onboard. Again, this is part of the same fabric, so all the resolution has been done for you. You just need to pick whether you want to onboard an array or add a disk. So I'm going to add a disk. Let's say I'm going to create something called test2. It's a 1 gigabyte LUN, no problem. That's going to go off and create the LUN on the array. Now, the end result of this would be a disk that's local to the VM. And, come on. I'm not sure if this is blowing up on me, but a disk local to the VM, not as interesting as a disk that is part exposed to all the nodes in the cluster. So if this hasn't locked up on me, basically I would have gone to the machine tier, I would have gone to properties and storage, and there we go. So this is the LUN that would be exposed inside the guest. So if I cancel that, so test two, I go to the machine tier, right-click properties, and I go to storage tab, I would add a disk, and then I would select test two, okay? Let me log into this machine. So now that's registered, I would go into the machine itself, and there we go. Rescan for disks. So since we're not automating inside the guest, all of this would have to be done manually, but at this point, this LUN is now exposed to all the nodes in the cluster. So to finish up, I've got a few more minutes. I'll skip all the scripts themselves. They're just there for reference when you're looking at this on the plane on the way home. I do want to mention that all of this work is really only possible with the work that we do with our partners. And so for the partners in the room and for those attending TechEd, first of all, thank you for all the work that we do together, especially for all of you that consume all of these services. You know, there's a lot of partners that we work with, and we do this through the PlugFests. I mentioned PlugFest because this is just an example of the partnerships that we have working with partners like Nimble Storage and NetApp, EMC, and others that are building SMIS providers and integrating with the System Center stack. And so you can see, you can look at all the PlugFest reports and all the activities. We do about 5 PlugFests a year, not Microsoft. SNIA hosts 5 PlugFests a year, and we attend 6 a year, we attend 5. And there's actually one coming up right after TechEd. It'll be in Mountain View and in Shanghai. So for those that have worked with for partners in particular, but just so that from a customer perspective, I know Windows Logo is a very important certification as part of working with Microsoft and Windows and different devices. So using SMAPI, something that right now we have is essentially a set of VMM scripts that test this stack end-to-end. Something that we're considering is actually formalizing these tests into part of something with Windows Logo. This is something for a future release, so we're not definitive on the exact timeline and the implementation, but the idea would be that partners that pass these tests are part of the Windows Logo cert. Now, there's another set of tests that are provided by SNIA, and this is called CTP. So partners that are SMIS compliant would also, ideally, we should also be passing CTP and then pass Windows certification. And then finally, what we hope to do is take some of the scale testing that we do, integrate it into the Windows Logo cert. So I mentioned this primarily around for customers that have been asking, where are the devices on the Windows Logo? Right now, they're not. They're handled as a separate on a separate page, but we are definitely something that we're investing in along with partners for a future release. So with that, I really thank you for your time. Since it's a Monday session, I took the liberty of putting all the sessions that follow this session that are, I think, key around disaster recovery, spaces, scale-out file server. You've got some great sessions coming up. You've also got some interesting customer sessions coming up as well. So I highly recommend these. Obviously, there's a lot more. With that, where you can find me, here's my Twitter. You can definitely send me an email, any questions that you have. There's a feedback program now that we have where you can send in a survey or fill in a survey, provide some feedback. Some literature here as well as far as what we do in SMI Lab. Some of the work that Brocade and HDS have done for a large retail company. And so, you know, this is an example of how they use SMIS. So with that, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time here. I will be here after if you want to ask any questions. Otherwise, I hope you have a great TechEd. Take care. Thank you.